Welcome to This Day in Pottery History, a series of brief observations, meditations, vignettes, and editorials about the backroads and byways of pottery history that helped shape the pottery world as we know it today, here on this very day in pottery history. I'm your host, Stephen Earp. For images and reading lists associated with these narratives, visit StephenEarp.com/podcasts. And now, let's get going. Episode 51, The Common Goat. Thomas Bewick's riveting 1790 publication, A General History of Quadrupeds, includes a chapter titled The Common Goat. Prints inserted at every chapter end in Bewick's tome exemplified, for the reader's edification, ideal versions of each animal in question. In this case, we see a boy, let's call him Billy, playing with his favorite pet goat. So what does this have to do with pottery history? For one thing, Bewick's book was a gold mine for English potters of the time, who needed readily available imagery of warm, fuzzy animals to slap onto cheap transfer print creamwares for domestic and export markets, including the insatiable American market. A plate featuring Billy's favorite goat fit right in, given the sentimentalized nature of much of that era's transfer decoration. The potters who lifted Billy and his goat asked no permission from Bewick, nor offered any royalties. But even before England's more stringent 1840s copyright laws, those potters might touch up the bucolic scenes. A frilly border here, a bit of hand painting there, to make their finished products ever more appealing. They adapted the prints to fit their surfaces and their needs. I first heard of Billy's goat plate and Bewick's source prints several years ago in Judy Seidel's transferware blog titled Dishy News. Her article led me to consider the roles of adaptation and innovation in ceramics. Cheap 19th century transferwares might not interest today's ceramic artists or others who favor expressions of innovation or the cutting edge rather than adaptation in pottery. After all, isn't innovation all about bringing something new to the table, a more individualized touch, instead of a merely derivative rehashing of been there, done that, old ground? The thing is, innovation and adaptation are not directly opposed either-or ways of evaluation. They're two entirely different, in fact, unrelated, concepts altogether. Innovation is essentially just a yardstick by which we measure the relative impact of a potter's efforts. Wow, have you ever seen such a thing? Transferwares, for example, were a major innovation of the late 18th century. They were the cutting edge of what was possible in ceramics at the time. On a completely different level, adaptation is simply a manifestation of style, the process, manner, and degree to which we select and apply personal, cultural, technical, and decorative resources available to us as potters. It's how we actually go about making things. Overly emphasizing the endless quest for something new under the sun risks falling into a flat, simplistic, basically not terribly insightful, either-or mentality. Innovative and new, or adaptive and not. Clearly acknowledging the value and provenance of our resources, and I mean not just how far we cherry-pick from them, bend them to our wills, or even how we talk about them when presenting our pots, but in how our pots actually look, how we go about making them, offers insights into a broad, rich, socially, and dare I say, historically, engaged environment. Isn't this a humane way to appreciate pottery efforts through time and to make pots today? If it takes a meditation on maudlin 19th century transferware images of goats to realize this point, well, so be it. Thanks for listening. And until next time, remember that saying that would be right at home on the rim of an old tulipware pie plate. Our life is of a tangled yarn, the good and ill together.